Welcome to the Leadership Forum.
We call this the Leadership Forum,
where we discuss leaders and followers.
It's not a political trick.
This episode is a repeat of the live session that happens on Monday's mid-morning show with Omboy Mboro. The Leadership Forum.
Leadership Forum, only on Hope FM.
Listen and live.
My name is Omboy Mboro, and we are set for the Leadership Forum. The Leadership Forum happens here, and we've had a short break as our Bishop Emeritus David Oginde took a short compassion break. And now back and ready to pick it up. How have you been, Bishop?
I'm well, thank you.
And the last time you were here, you did begin on characteristics of a good, credible leader. We only did two parts or two items of a list that was to be as long as 10, I believe. Is that where you want to pick up? Because, well, at least then for those of us with a vote, we maybe we can rescue the situation for the next time.
Hopefully, this time around,
we choose the right people. Mm.
Yes.
Go ahead.
We have talked quite a bit about the leader, but we also need to talk about followers. If you remember when we were doing something that we called the toxic triangle that produces destructive leaders, we said that the toxic triangle consists of three factors that leads to destructive leadership. The one is the leader himself, who we have already talked about, who is not thinking about people, who is thinking more of him or herself, who is not concerned about the organization or the members of that organization. But we also talked about the followers. The followers who are passive followers, who are sycophants, followers who are selfish in their desires, and therefore they help the leader, and help there is in quotes, to become destructive, because they can see that this leader is not doing what is expected or is not going the right direction. But because of their own personal interests as followers, as members, they let the leader be. You know, they let the leader do what they do. And that only adds fuel to the fire that is already burning. And the third one, we talked about environment. In fact, it starts the other way around. So we should really start with the environment. An environment that lends itself to certain types of leaders. So a leader steps into that space or this environment, and they look like messiahs. They look like saviors. And so people rally behind them without thinking twice. What kind of a leader is this that we are choosing for ourselves? So an environment that is broken down, where structures and systems, values have broken down, is very, very conducive for raising up destructive leaders. So when you look at these three, especially in our context, as we go to choosing leaders, I think we are in that space. We are in a space where our environment as a country is such that people are desperate for a messiah. People are desperate for a savior, somebody who can deliver us out of the mess that we find ourselves in, somebody who can deal with issues like corruption, somebody who can deal with issues of ethnicity, somebody who can deal with issues of inequalities, and so on and so forth. So in that kind of an environment, it's a very dangerous environment to select leaders from or in. Because anybody who appears to know what they are doing can easily ascend into leadership because we are desperate. Anybody can fit in. So when we share these issues of competencies and attributes of leaders, we need to keep that in mind, that we are in an environment where we could easily get anybody who looks good.
Oh.
Yes. Just like I've said, the toxic triangle basically says that the first thing for you to factor that would lead people to getting a destructive leader is the environment. You know, it's if the environment is bad, then anybody is acceptable. Yes.
Bishop, has there ever been a different environment, really, in this country than what we have now? I'm just thinking back. I'm thinking back over a number of general elections that I participated in one way or the other, even when it was just reporting what is happening. I'm just wondering, really, have we ever had a different scenario? It's not, I'm just thinking, is anything worse than has been before?
No.
No.
You are right. You are very right.
Okay.
And that is the sad thing. That's what we were talking about, the apathy that we see among voters. You look at the by-elections that have been there in the recent past. The voter turnout now, leave alone the people registering to vote. Even those who have votes, quite a number of them did not turn up to vote. In some places, it's one third of the people who are registered in that constituency or ward who turned up to go and vote in a by-election. It shows you that they don't care. You know, why should I waste my time? I would rather go and sell my wares on the streets than go and queue to vote. So that environment, you are right. It has not changed too much. Let me not be too pessimistic. I would say that we have gone very far, but we have not gone far enough to make people feel that leadership in our context makes a difference. We have had opportunities, and that's what brings us to this issue of what kind of leader should we have? Because we can refer to 2002, 2003. We were coming from a place where we were tired. I mean, it is the worst part perhaps we have ever been in, as a nation. And so we were looking for that Messiah desperately, perhaps not as now, you know. It was worse in 2002. And 2003, we wanted to be emancipated from slavery. We wanted to be released from the shackles of the past. So people were ready to get anybody. Thankfully, the leadership that was in place, or let me say, the people who were in place seeking to get into leadership, by and large, were credible and competent, which is what we have dealt with in our 10 attributes. They were competent, they were credible, they were people you know, these people can deliver, and they formed a very formidable force and team to try and provide leadership. And indeed, if you remember, when they got into government, things began to happen. Mm. And there was just that excitement that finally we have got to Canaan. You know, we are in this land flowing with milk and honey. It was a tremendous transformation that was going to take us to I don't know where. I can. It's only nostalgic that if we had stayed on that trajectory, I think we'd be a superpower.
Wow. Yes.
Seriously. Because imagine
what happened.
In 2003, after the elections, Kenyans were listed as the most optimistic people on the face of the earth.
What?
It was reported. We were the most optimistic people on the face of the earth. And that optimism was not based on nothing. It was based on something. We were seeing the transformations that were taking place in various arms of government, whether it was in the judiciary, in the transport sector, in the roads, in the education, talk about it. There was such activity that was changing this nation into something else. And within a very short period of time, you could see tangible results. You could see real things happening. But unfortunately, failure quickly came upon us because of the leaders. So the environment was quite conducive for transformation. The people were quite ready for transformation. But the leaders let us down in that process. And that's how comes we can sit here this morning, going to afternoon, to talk about leadership again. And you are saying, have we ever been better, worse, you know, and treat us the same? It is sad because this is 20 years later, we should not be sitting at the same space. We shouldn't. But unfortunately, we are.
Yeah, we're not better and we are not worse.
I think we are better, but we could be much better.
Especially with your nostalgic recall of 2000.
No, seriously, if you think of the development, transformation that has taken place in this country in the last 20 years, it's phenomenal. It's great.
Yes.
It's drive on our roads and you know that there's something that has happened. The road network in this country is amazing. The economy and other things. There are many, many good things. It's just that we are a pessimistic group of people, and so we see the empty side of the glass more than we see the full side. But when it comes to leadership and leaders, I think we are still a bit far. We are still far. We lost the baton dropped, and we are still looking for it. It's somewhere on the grass, you know, we are looking for it. So we have not been able to, from a leadership perspective, move forward. I was reading something that we wrote in 2005, just before the referendum, and the concerns that we were raising at that time, which led to the 2007 elections. If the dates were removed, that writing fits today. It reads word for word. Everything is exactly the same. And I thought to myself, this is so sad. Because this is 15, 16 years ago. And it's like from a leadership perspective, we are still at the same space. We are still at the same place. That we have not streamlined our political engagement. We have not got to that place where we can deal with our politics in a more constructive way. That is the big concern. And it has to do with the kind of leaders that we select or elect.
All right. Bishop, let me just read for you a few of this. Now, some of the feedback that's already in. Bishop, I just read for you, then decide how you want to comment. This one says, voting is very tricky because it is like those who lead are not determined by our votes. And the person puts an exclamation mark. Then says, it's like it's already determined by someone else. So unfortunate. Her name is Esther, but that is where she is coming from. This one, Gloria says, hi, Wamboi. My name is Wamboi, spelled W-A-M-B-U-I. All right, and Bishop. She says, voting doesn't help, nor does it change anything in my life. Bishop, you have said the plain truth. Why people are not interested, and I am one of them. She says, registered, she has voted twice, and then she says, but not voting again forever. All right, on that final note, let me go to another one who says, praise God, Pastor Omboy and Bishop. Thank you for these insightful sessions. The youth who are in the neck of my hood, okay, are saying, this is what they are saying, that they cannot vote because, number one, the vote is predetermined by the so-called deep state. That's in quotes, deep state. Number two, the ones in the neck of this person's hood are saying they have no way of keeping the leader accountable and asking him or her how he will fulfill the promises made. Number three, they have seen their loved ones hurt after elections, and they never see the leaders come after they win. The leaders come with the same promises, yes, but with different. I think we lost a bit of that text, but I think it's clear. And finally, I'll read this for you, Bishop. Someone who says, I agree 100% with Bishop Oginde in regards to the elections of 2002. We were exuberant. We were overjoyed to have been taken from slavery. And says, I'm loving the show, being enlightened as usual. All right. She says, you're a blessing. And Judy, listening in Westlands, we are happy and thank you for your text there and your feedback. Bishop, what do you hear so far?
The same things that we were talking about is what seems to be coming through. The lack of trust from the voters. Some believing that their vote will not make a difference. And I think that is very unfortunate. We have to continue to build confidence because we have only this Kenya. We don't have another one. Let me talk briefly about sometimes it's perceptions. Many times I would say it's perceptions. I take the example of the by-election in Kiamba. The by-election in Kiamba, I would say, without doubt, was very critical for the president. It was in his backyard, it's in his county. He should have done everything to make sure that that vote was on his side. But it went the other way around. What that tells me is that there was a level to which the IEBC was allowed to do their work. And hence, the result that came out could be considered credible. Now, the same has happened in a few other elections, by-elections. Yet still, we believe or we perceive that the so-called deep state, because deep state is not outside government, deep state is in government, is going to manipulate elections. That we as Kenyans have developed over the years, not just now, over the years, we somehow believe that the government will still vote irrespective of what happens. That could be yes and no. But to us Kenyans, if we are going to change this, we have to begin to build trust in our institutions. It is not going to happen by a miracle. Go out and vote. And for us who are Christians, pray that God will make your vote to count. God has the capacity to stop thieves from stealing your vote, from cankerworms eating your sweat. So keeping away from voting does not solve the problem. It does not. Always imagine that which you do, if everybody does it make the world a better place? So if all of us then did not vote, how would we get leaders? So we have to begin to build trust in our institutions. They will steal a little, but we'll keep going until we get to that place where we have greater confidence. Even the most developed nations of the world are still struggling with credibility of electoral outcomes. That is a fact. So there is no heaven on earth as long as human beings are still around. Sinful human beings are still around. We will always have that problem. But business in this world must be done on trust. We were talking recently with the IEBC chair, Wafula Chebukati, as religious leaders. We invited him to a meeting to just explain to us the voting process and how they're preparing and so on. And he said something that made me very sad. We have been complaining that Kenyan elections are the most expensive in the region and actually around the world. It's among the most expensive. And he said that part of the reason that our elections are so expensive is because of lack of trust. Kenyans don't trust their electoral process. So we have made so many laws that guide elections. And for you to meet all this process, he gave us just two examples, which I remember. One, he said, our ballot papers have such high security systems to the level that they are almost equivalent to a banknote.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, that's what he said. So because we don't trust our ballot papers, so they have to have security marks and so on that is almost equivalent to printing a banknote. They cannot even be printed in the country. They have to be printed outside the country. All that adds to the cost of our elections. That was just one example. The other example he said is that our law says that all votes have to be counted at each polling station, and then especially presidential elections, have to be transmitted electronically to the tallying center with an image of the form. He says, because we do not have 4G everywhere in the country, that is a very expensive exercise. So sometimes you have to wait for hours or days for you to get these results. Each polling station, he said, can only have a maximum of 700 people. Each polling station. And that each polling station has at least six officers. So six officers serving 700 people. So we are ending up with about 50 something thousand polling stations. Because we don't trust that if there are many people in a polling station, that it will be handled well. Somebody may put in some ballots here and there. So we want as few as possible. We are almost saying that each polling station should have only 100 people or 50. That adds to the cost. Now, what all this tells us, and he said several examples. He said it all adds up to the total cost of running our election. And he gave us an example of one of the European nations that recently had the election. He said all the polling officers were volunteers, people who just volunteered themselves to oversee the elections, citizens who feel this my contribution to the nation. Ballot papers were ordinary printed papers. No security features, nothing. It's just an ordinary printed paper with the names of the people, like we do in our chamas, you know. So when you and a few other things, he was giving us a real example of this particular country that just had elections about less than a month or so ago. So he said, when you look at the cost of that election, it is so low, but people trust that whatever is done there, the outcome is trustworthy, and people move on with their lives. So we Kenyans don't trust each other. We don't trust one another. We are thieves and robbers. That's how we view one another, you know? And it turns out it's also the same in our business sector. It's the same in various levels. We steal exams. Our exam period in this country is like a war. Police officers are mobilized to go to schools.
Yes.
The whole government goes to invigilate the exams. Where does that happen in the world? And so our exams also become very expensive because we don't trust each other. We steal exams. So before we blame government, let's blame ourselves as Kenyans. Why don't we just do the right thing? Why don't we just trust each other? Why don't we just be honest? I did my PhD online, 100% online. One of the very testing times was during exams, where you have your computer, you have the exam paper, and all the instruction says is you should not look up anything in your books or in your papers as you answer these questions. My books and my papers are there with me. I can simply turn the books and check the answers and fill it in. But there is trust that is placed upon me as I do that exam, that then determines whether I am credible or not. I pray that one day Kenyans, we can get to that place.
Mm.
That a leopard can be left with to look after the goat and will not.
And the goat will be safe.
The goat will be safe. That is where we have to go as a nation. So I would want to encourage our brothers and sisters, our young people, and even those I've seen some people who are saying, I have the vote, but I'm not going to vote. So who is going to vote?
I'm looking at two. Someone is saying they're 35. They're not even your young 20-year-old or 21-year-old. They're 35 and saying, I moved from one constituency to another in terms of residence and I have voted before. I'm not interested in voting again.
So who is going to vote for that person? This person who is not interested in voting, who is going to choose the leader for them?
Another one is saying, I'm a registered voter. I ain't voting this time around.
And you ain't going to eat our food.
And another one, of late, there's no motivating factor remaining towards voting. Deep state already knows the next government. That there you go again, the deep state thing. This narrative, Bishop, where did it begin and why did people buy into it? You know, like the way the whale just swallows everything. Why? Why did the whale swallow everything here?
Of course, these are historical, you know what you call historic. We have in Kenya, we have historical injustices.
Yes.
So we have a history where votes were stolen. That is a fact. We have a history where electoral outcomes were manipulated. That is a fact. But we cannot dwell in that past. We must make progressive change. We have an independent electoral and boundaries commission, which is anchored in the constitution and guarded by the laws. We have to trust that these people can do the right thing. And so instead of starting with the assumption or presumption that they are going to do the wrong thing, let's start with the assumption and presumption that they are going to do the right thing. And if they do the wrong thing, then let's look for that wrong thing and try and correct it. That's the only way we can change.
Okay.
But if we start from the premise that these people are going to do the wrong thing, then we will never move out of this quagmire. So let's trust our institutions. Let's trust our judiciary. Let's trust our commissions that have been put in place. Let's trust our government, the executive, and so on. And let's begin to build our country by digging all these negative holes. It is our country that is going to collapse. I've just given you an example of the cost of our elections. The IBC is asking for, 40 something billion to run an election. How many roads can that do? How many schools can that build? Simply because we don't trust ourselves.
Let's go to where we had wanted to start, Bishop, which is the characteristics of a good leader.
We have dealt with them. We have mentioned some of them.
We have. Do you want to go to the third one? Because the last time you talked about this, you talked of competence, and then you talked of credibility.
Very important. Mm-hmm. Especially that second one, credibility.
Credibility.
Because that is what we are struggling with as a nation. We don't trust our leaders. So those who present themselves to be to leadership positions should be very deliberate about building credibility. And we too should look out for men and women who are credible. Because one of the things that I think somebody mentioned earlier and very true about our country is that many of our elections are run on euphoria. People don't sit down to consider, what kind of leader do we want? Is this person that I'm selecting or electing credible? And I have said it publicly, and I'll say it again. Some of the people we have voted for, and I know you can say elections were stolen, but the people we have voted for, simply because they come from our part of the country or the party I support, we don't care about the persons. I've seen situations where credible persons are on the ballot with very dubious characters. But because this person, credible person, is not in the right party, we will not vote for them. We will not vote for them. I'm talking about voters. We voters. Because we belong to this particular party, so my president will come from this party. My governor will come from this party. My senator will come from the same party. My member of parliament will come from the same party. My MCA will come from the same party, and so on and so forth. So this thing they call a suit, you know, three, 6-piece, you know?
Yes, 3-piece suit, yes.
So when I go, I'm voting party, I'm not voting person. That's how we end up with people who have dubious characters in different levels of our leadership. Because
are you saying it is wrong? That's yet another narrative that's been sold to Kenyans, to vote for a party because the party stands for certain things. So you vote for the party. So it becomes a 3-piece.
Then you are not choosing leaders, you're choosing parties.
So you are calling on Kenyans. If I were to write an article today on what you're saying, you are calling on Kenyans to stop voting for parties and to vote for individual leaders going forward.
Less because, Omboy, you come from a ward where you're voting, okay?
For the MCA.
For the MCA.
Uh-huh.
Now, you have these 3, 4, 5 candidates presenting themselves as MCAs.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to deal with matters to do with your ward. They are not going to deal with matters to do with your party.
If I have any. Yes.
No, assume you have. Yes.
Yes.
They are the people who are going to make sure that you, in your ward, there is water flowing. In your ward, the roads are done. The garbage is collected and all those things.
Mm.
They are not going to be dealing with party. Are we together?
Yes.
So if you elect this, let me call them dubious character, simply because they endeared themselves to the party leaders and they were therefore given a nomination certificate to be their party candidate in your ward, you then have no right to complain when this person doesn't deliver? Because you knew all along this person was not going to deliver. But you chose them because they are in the right party.
Mm.
So we must break that thing. Yes. If you are going to elect a member of parliament who you want to address issues in your constituency, and there are candidates who have presented themselves, and there's this candidate in your party, in quotes, who you know, this man is a thief, this man is a liar, this man is, you know, but they are in my party. So I vote for them because we are voting six piece. Then now this man steals all your money. All the money that comes for CDF and what and everything for your constituency goes into his private account. Then you cry. Who should be blamed?
The voter.
Exactly. That's why we are giving this list. Otherwise, we should not be talking about this list of leadership attributes. We should be talking about party manifestos.
So then, I hear you. I totally, I'm 100% in agreement with you, Bishop. But so then, for someone who sees it differently, perhaps the question then begs, what then is the use of parties and manifestos?
Yeah, let me tell you. As citizens, we are able to, if we do this, and I pray that everyone does this, we will change how parties organize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A party will not pick a dubious person to be their candidate because they know if we pick this guy, he's going to lose. So they will look for the right kind of people to put in their list. And then it will become easier for us to select the six of them. We will have changed how parties do their primaries, do their nominations. But because they know that whoever person we put there, as long as our party is popular, they are going to go through, then they don't care. They don't care about you. They care about their party issues. And the leaders of the party then become dictators as to who becomes nominated in a particular constituency, a particular ward, a particular county, because they know once, because our party is popular in this area, anybody who gets the party's ticket is going to go through. It is a fraud. And it's a fraud that only we as voters can change. So if we start voting for competent, credible individuals, parties will change because they know if we take this guy, this one will not sell. This will not sell. Yeah. And they will, politicians know where their bread is buttered.
All right. I hear you. Yes. I hear you. Finally, on this one, and then I must take you now so that you can give us the third characteristic. Finally, so that we get from this, this whole thing, the narrative of, and this every time, I think every time, there's quite a huge group of people that work with this when the rubber will meet the road at the election, let's say that week, the week of the general election, something will change, a huge number of people will shift towards that. There is now the way it looks, even the polls are showing it's a race between two horses. And if the two horses do not include this person of integrity and competence and credibility that I was looking at, then people have a way of shifting and saying, now, It's a choice between two evils, and I must really just lose the lesser of the two evils, number two. And then people then choose not who they would have chosen, but the two that are most likely to either way take it. Please address that, Bishop, for us.
That is what I'm, that's why I have actually addressed it, is just what
okay,
I have
said. Say it again. I think I haven't heard that one properly.
Yes. What we are saying here is that 20 years after 2002, we should not still be at the same place where we were in the 90s and the 80s. We should not. But we as the electorate have allowed ourselves to be herded like goats into the place where the politician wants to take us. And so that will not change as long as we are willing to be herded. That will not change. Because politics is about self-interest, and we talked about it, even in organizational politics. It's about self-interest. Yes. So if we don't change the way we conduct our elections, we as the electors, the voters, that will not change. But if we change how we do elections so that those of us who are listening to this program, we are going to be going out there to do further civic education among the electorate on these particular issues. If we get a sizable number of us who are convinced that we are going to choose leaders, not parties, that we are not going to be moved by euphoria, that we are not going to be bought with money and lessons and T-shirts, we will begin to take the journey towards national transformation. And we are capable of doing that. So that in another 3-4 elections, it may not happen quickly, but in another 3-4 elections, we will begin to get quality leaders who can deliver for us. And that's what we must aim for. We must think long term. Let's not think 2022. Let's think 2050, you know, that we want to make a difference in this country. So beginning with 2022, I may be one person. Mm-hmm. And I made my, like some people have said, my vote will not make a difference, but I make my statement. I will vote for the right leader in my ward. I will vote for the right leader in my constituency. I'll vote for the right leader in my county. I'll vote for the right women representative. I'll vote for the right president. Whether those people win or not is not the issue.
All right.
But I will have made my statement. Are we together? If several of us, many of us begin to do that and we pass on the word and we make a movement and saying we are going to choose the right kinds of persons, we could create a groundswell that then begins to transform this country.
Wow.
And by 2050, by 2030 something, we can be in that place where the people, even people who offer themselves for elections, will think twice. They'll say, with who I am and what I better even not go there, because I have my chances of making it are very slim. So we'll begin to get quality people who present. So we'll now not be choosing between two evils. We'll be choosing between two good people.
You know? Yes.
But that change has to start now. It is not going to happen just like that. It's going to happen because we as citizens have made a decision. We are not going to vote in thieves. We are not going to vote in robbers. We are not going to vote in immoral people. We are not going to vote in these kinds of jokers.
Yes.
I hope I've convinced at least you.
But I did not need convincing.
You are the only one I have, you know.
What I can tell you is that you're finally very clear. You're very clear. Because then what I hear you say is that the only way to change the narrative is by doing the right thing, even when I may have to do that alone.
Mm-hmm.
Do it with a prayer that we can be, with time, we can be a formidable force to reckon with. We can be a sizable number of us that are doing that to change the way things are done, because no one can finally ignore us.
Exactly.
Did I hear you?
You've passed with an A.
I like getting an A. Thank you, Bishop. I hear you. Thank you so much. So do we take just one other of the characteristics of a good leader and then we pick it up next time?
Good. The next one actually is something that perhaps you have already talked about in passing. This is calling. Now, being in a Christian radio platform, Christians are generally familiar with calling. But this calling goes beyond the calling into ministry, the calling of a Christian. This says that the person who is presenting themselves to be candidates for leadership are driven by a noble and altruistic purpose. That I can look at this person and say, this person is going into or is seeking a position of leadership, not to benefit themselves, but because they believe they want to serve the people and they want to do it in a way that benefits the people. And it's not difficult to know that. So the person is not getting into a political position for selfish purposes, but is getting into political position because they believe or they see the need and they believe that they can offer a solution, provide a solution. Some of these people will actually step out from some very, very good positions where they could be, but are saying, I'm willing to offer my sacrifice because of this calling. That's what the calling I'm talking about. If we now bring it into the Christian context, that we can say that this person is also operating under the fear of God.
Calling
to leadership, a call to leadership, is so critical. There are people, you just look at them and you see, this guy just wants to go and make money. And no wonder when they end up in parliament or in the county assemblies, their first agenda is the salaries and the vehicles and all these things. In an economy that we are saying our economy is not doing well, how can you possibly be looking for more money? It tells me that you did not have a calling into that work. People who have a calling are ready even to serve without being paid. They are ready to serve without being paid. Because the cause, you know, I forget which verse it is, which says, isn't there a cause? You know?
Mm.
So the cause drives you to step into position of leadership. If somebody pays, gives you something in the process, you are so happy, whatever it is, because you're pursuing a cause. You have a calling. Sad to say, but quite a number of people who we see entering into the political arena, their goal, their purpose is far from a calling.
It's a money-making agenda.
Venture. Yes. Yes.
And the money is not for everyone, it's for the
for
individual.
Me and my family.
If it These was for everyone, it might still have worked better if they were out to get money, but for everybody.
Then they are not out to get money. They are out to serve people.
Even so.
Yes. When you look at some reports, the auditors' reports and county governments, MCAs, sometimes even at the presidential level, you just say, surely, surely, surely. How can somebody stash away billions that are meant for building a county into their private accounts? There's no calling. And that person cannot then fight corruption at the county level. That person cannot fight corruption at the national level because they themselves are part of the process. So let's look for men and women who have a calling.
Just a final one on that, because I see it's like I have only one more minute to go. I can see if someone totally new came, I can see what to look for in terms of credibility. I can also kind of see what to look for in terms of competence. What, there's a new person, a total new appearance. What do I look for to sense if they have a calling? Because it's just words. They are just coming for the first time. I don't know. Yes.
Listen to what they are not saying.
All right.
Yes. Because people will tell you, we'll build roads. We are going to create 1 million jobs. We are going to do. Those are common things we have heard. But listen to what they are not saying. Do background check where they have worked, what they have done. How have they served people? Is it a selfless? We talked about altruistic purpose. In other words, serving for the sake of the other person. Have they done this wherever they have been? If they have been CEOs of companies, organizations, they have been heads of department in somewhere, they are serving in church or in an NGO or wherever, how have they served? That will tell you.
Ah.
And it is not difficult to find out. If this person has been sacked because they were corrupt, surely. You don't expect them to change their skins too so quickly.
Okay. I hear you, Bishop, and thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for we have quite some things to chew on and to think through even as we get to more of these characteristics of a good leader.
Join us next week, same time, for another episode of the Leadership Forum.